The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. Across the country, we're seeing more and more interest in libertarianism, in the ideas of less government and more liberty. And as part of that, we're seeing more and more people take up the mantle and run as libertarian candidates, pledging to downsize government and protect civil rights. My first guest ran in 2014 in District 103 in Missouri for the position of state representative. Drake Hodge has done all kinds of work and done all kinds of outreach in Missouri about civil rights and about downsizing government to protect freedom. Drake, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Now, in 2014, you ran for the position of state representative. What were some of the civil issues, some of the civil rights and social justice issues that were especially important in your campaign?
There were three things that I concentrated on. Our campaign slogan was involving equality and asking, are we really having justice if the laws don't apply equally to everyone? Mm-hmm. Now, in our state, we have a $16 billion budget last year. I'm not sure what the current budget is, but I'm sure it's bigger. And we gave some enormous portion of that money to help people start businesses, and or at least we said we were starting businesses, or to enhance businesses like the Total Quality Jobs Program. But the net effect of it was a new company would come in, would recruit talented labor away from an existing company, the state would subsidize it, and the existing business would either be reduced or wiped out, and then the new business would continue until the subsidy ran out, and they would move to another city or state and would do the same thing. In the long run...
Just to make sure that I'm understanding what we're saying that essentially there was a program that gave politically connected or politically savvy, quote, businesses, although we're going to use that term very, very loosely, because to me a business is somebody that gets money through the free market, not steals it from taxpayers, but a loosely defined business would come in, get a bunch of money from the state, use that to interfere with existing businesses, and then they would just leave.
Correct. But that's not the end of it.
Oh, this continues. Okay.
Oh, yes. Because that's just the media tends to focus on the obviousness. Oh, we got we created these jobs, which in fact we stole these jobs. But what they never talk about is the aftermath. Mm-hmm. Like the vacant buildings, the falling down factories, the rise in unemployment for the people that lost their jobs who couldn't move with the new company that went somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And we don't talk about all the poor people that had to labor extra days of every year to make sure that this politically connected person could get the money from them. Mm-hmm. No one ever talks about the men and women that can't support themselves or can't take care of their families or who forego their dreams because the state has decided for them that they don't need those dollars.
Let's explain exactly. I mean, I think I'm following you there, but let's explain exactly what we're talking about there. We're talking about – now, what do you mean that the state is deciding that they don't need that money? What does that really mean?
Well, taxation. Every time that the state takes a dollar from someone, that person no longer has that dollar to invest. Now, somebody might say, well, it's just a dollar. But if you only earn $7 an hour at the minimum wage, that's a lot of money. okay, and we don't have programs that just take $1. We, you know, every time I look at a pay stub, I see a whole bunch of big numbers. I don't just see a bunch of little ones. And, you know, so we're talking about the lost cost, the opportunity cost, I think economists call it. But there's also the other side of it, the social cost. We're telling people in our society that working hard and laboring to create wealth, inventing things, coming up with ideas, inventing new things, making people's lives better is the wrong way to go about being successful. The right way to go about being successful is to become friends with the governor and to give money to the senators and to take the House representatives out to lunch and to ask them to steal from everybody around and give it to the person that's doing the requesting. That undermines society's sense of justice.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, there's no question that if you are shown constantly that unfairness is rewarded, that cronyism matters more than hard work, and then you have, you know, people are supposed to be in positions of leadership reinforcing that negative message, I mean, that's an inherently morally corruptive force. Now, what were some of the things that in your campaign you talked about doing to stop that?
Well, first and foremost, I wanted to see the state put an absolute moratorium on tax credits. I asked for us to have the law apply to everyone fairly. And then the third one was that we would stop with this, what they call it, crony capitalism, but what it really is fascism.
And were you, I mean, when you were out there, when you were talking to people, did you feel that people were able to really understand this idea that says that if we stop doing this, if we stop this crony capitalism and fascism, then that's going to allow more equal opportunity for all people who are willing to work hard?
It was a very mixed bag. A rather large number of people were worried that they were going to lose their benefits. They were inured about, you know, whatever they thought the government was giving them. So they were afraid. There were people who thought it was a good idea, but told me there's no way that would ever work. And even though I would show them the history that, you know, the first 120 years we were a country, we didn't do this stuff, and look at what we did back then. And there's also just the problem of when we start talking about numbers and things, I see that the current culture seems much more concerned with feelings and feeling good than it's concerned with reality and the bad feelings that reality can bring if we don't behave a certain way.
Now, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so I said, I suppose so. It was kind of, there was some skepticism, there was a whole lot of fear, and there was a much smaller group of people who got it. But the funny thing or the ironic thing is that the people that were getting it are people who do have businesses, either they own their own or they work for someone else. They see every day how the tax giveaways, the tax breaks, and all this direction from the government interferes with their capacity to do their jobs or to do them well. Or you know, to provide goods and services.
Absolutely. You know, as a small business owner myself, I see that there's actually two parts of it. You know, one, here in Maryland, a very crony capitalist state, we see one that, yes, it absolutely makes things more difficult to run a business if you're not interested in crony capitalism. There's no question about it. So on one side, you're making things a little bit harder. But there's another thing that I see, and it's subtle, but it's very important. And there's kind of specialization that takes place in a free market. Some people get good at, for example, in a traditional market, there's going to be some people who get good at making shoes, some people that get good at working with electronics, some people that get good at these various skilled tasks. We have doctors, we have lawyers, and we have some people whose primary skill set is getting money from the government. And their tertiary skill set, if you're lucky, is providing whatever good or service. So it is in almost a cliche that we see here in Maryland that the very companies that are the best at getting money from the government are also the worst at providing goods and services. So we're kind of cramming down an inferior quality product down everybody's throat through these government subsidies and unfair tax credits. Do you think that this is something that, when you're talking to other libertarians, do you think that this is something that's catching on in other states, this desire to shut down this crony capitalism?
I see it as a mixed bag. It seems to me that the longer this goes on, the more and more people seem to be just convinced that the only solution is ever more government programs, no matter what reason is set before them, whatever evidence they see. And I really think it has to do with just the way that we are educated. I teach professionally, and the bane of my life is the first-year freshmen who don't know how to think critically. They should have learned this in sixth grade. How did they get all the way through the public school system without being able to think critically, without being able to say, A is not non-A? So if I'm supposed to get an apple and I only have bananas, I have to go back and say, I don't have any apples. You know, I don't need a government program. I just don't have any apples. But, I mean, it's insane how that works. I believe that we are starting to see, though, as the costs rise, like right now I've noticed in my state, prices of everything have just gone up astronomically. You know, after Obamacare and a couple of the bank bailouts, I'm seeing restaurants that I ate at, 2 years ago that would cost me $10 for a meal are now $13 and $14 for the same meal. I see it in other places where, like the cost of medical services, despite all of Obamacare's profitability and help, things cost more than ever. I mean, I just found out that my health insurance company charges me more for my prescriptions than if I just went and bought them off the shelf. Like, wait a second, how is that supposed to work? I don't understand it. So it's a very confused system. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about, I forgot to mention earlier, was the fairness of regulations. In our state, we get a lobby group will go and ask the regulators to regulate a certain way to keep out competition. And as a result, a lot of people can't compete. Like we've seen in the national press about people trying to do nails or sell coffins or braid hair or whatever, or give shots for vaccinations. Do other things that a parent could do, but, oh, no, you can't do that without a state license regulation. So in our state, you have to have 4 hours as a beautician trainee than you have to have as a dentist.
Wow.
I just have to think bad things will happen to people that have a bad dentist. I mean, if you have a bad weave or a bad haircut, I mean, you can outgrow it in a couple of weeks, or you can put, there's things you can do, but, think about the insanity there. And then, of course, it turns out, as I looked into it, that that wasn't the worst of it. We have a system in which a legislator or a friend of the executive director of whichever agency can waive the requirement. So you, Arvin, are forbidden to operate your business in a way that you think is good, fitting, or proper because the lobbyists have convinced the regulators that that's bad. But I can operate my business the way you'd like to because I got a waiver.
Since
you are not connected, you're going to lose this game.
I think that's even more unjust. And that is just, unbelievable. Let's actually talk more about that specific issue right after this break. Drake, if people want to follow you, do you have a Facebook page or a website that people can learn more about you?
Oh, I'm in the transition.
Okay.
I will find one.
Okay. All right. Well, now here's the thing. It's the work you're doing in Missouri is excellent. I mean, I've heard so many good things about it. And there's candidates all over the country that are doing the same thing. If you're listening to this show, they can't do that alone. They're going to need your help to run these campaigns, to get their messages out. If you want to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state, go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Variety.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety. Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. Right now we're talking with Drake Hodge about justice, fairness, and equal treatment before the law in the state of Missouri, which I think also applies to really any other state. That basic principle that says we should all be equal before the law is a fundamental, absolute truth in any kind of a fair and democratic society. But it's not just that the laws need to be enforced equally. We also want to make sure that the laws themselves actually make some sense. Drake, what's going on in terms of criminal justice right now in Missouri?
Well, the state itself is kind of on notice and is looking at how the municipalities practice their law enforcement. I'm in O'Fallon, Missouri, which is about 30 miles west of the city of St. Louis along I-70. Recent report put out by, I believe it was the Post-Dispatch, showed what each municipality in our area gained by enforcing various laws like traffic laws, littering laws. Right down the street from where I'm at, Edmonton, Missouri, led the charge that $218 is what the city nets every time they accuse somebody of some kind of a crime. And these are crimes that involve non-victims, like speeding, running without a stop sign. Running a stop sign would not be a victimless, would be a victimless crime, but having a taillight out, or the infamous, oh, they pulled somebody over and smelled something, so they searched their car and found something they didn't like. Mm-hmm. But in our state, we have a system of plea bargains. So a drunk driver, a man or a woman who is consistently speeding and consistently getting pulled over, can go to an attorney and have the ticket fixed. And they will find out that they can suddenly get their DUI changed into some other crime. Mm-hmm. Or they can get speeding turned into a moving a tail light is out. And they can pay a $175 fine, and that's good. But I think that that kind of misses the point. If the laws are supposed to be about public safety, why would we want to have a system that encourages people to have no record of their violations? Why would we want someone to be able to plead guilty to a lesser crime? How is that justice to the person they supposedly harmed? In another instance, two guys were held hostage by their landlord. He made violent threats at them. He attempted to shoot them and stab them. The one guy he tried to stab couple hours later, they got a call out to the cops. The cop came and arrested them. Now, the law in Missouri says that that's domestic violence because they all three live together, and the dude that was doing these threats knew these people, shared a home with them. He meets all the criteria. He also unlawfully used a weapon. He was charged with 2 counts of domestic violence and 1 count of unlawful use of a weapon. Mm-hmm. So the city prosecutor decided that he could plead guilty to littering and pay an $80 fine.
Plead guilty did you just say littering?
Yes, littering. L-I-T-T-E-R-I-N-G.
Littering. How in the possible world does that mean? What does the one have to do with the other?
Because he has a lawyer, and in our little part of the world, all the lawyers are judges or prosecutors and defenders in other counties and other cities, and they just all work together. As long as they can milk it for money, they're good to go.
Fascinating. So essentially we see that this thing that many of us basically suspect, which is that, you know, things like speeding ticket violations, you know, the entire war on drugs basically exists only to keep the government funded, that it's just like a way to steal money from people while vaguely trying to make them feel guilty. The thing that we've always, that so many of us suspected, we now see is just, there's just no question about it. This is just nothing but just theft with some lame excuse attached to it.
Yeah, and it's a system that's self-perpetuating. I, under the Freedom of Information Law in our state, the Sunshine Law, I asked the city or the St. Charles County prosecutor to give me a list without identifying anybody's names, just a list of the volume of people that were charged with crimes, what those crimes were, and then what the final adjudication was. That is, were the charges dismissed? Mm-hmm. Did they plead guilty and get a sentence for the crime they were accused of? Did they plead guilty to a lesser charge and get a sentence for that? And or was there a trial and they wanted trial? I was informed that I need to pay $116,000 to get that information.
Wow.
I have the letter still. And I have to wonder, how can a prosecuting attorney not know what's going on? I mean, anybody who runs any other kind of business, let's face it, government's a business, they know how many cans of green beans they have. They know how many dogs are in the kennel. They know how many people they expect to have for dinner on Valentine's Day, and they plan accordingly. How can these people not know what the outcome is? And earlier I talked about the city of O'Fallon building a they basically just passed a bond issue yesterday to get $28 million more in loans so they can build a brand new courthouse to replace the really cool courthouse we already have and to build an even bigger jail so we can put more people in jail.
Wow.
And our city sits right on I-70 between St. Louis and Kansas City, so we get lots of traffic. And, you know, if our city follows the example of the other fine cities in our community, I should say our metropolitan region, we will see many, many more out-of-state and out-of-county residents being pulled over on under suspicious circumstances and given an option of paying a fine or being drugged through the court system in our municipality. And the thing is, in our state, municipalities can only prosecute people up to the misdemeanor level. So, again, if they can be charged with what would be a felony under the state statutes, but if it's prosecuted by these people in this court, they could get a great sweet plea bargain, pay a bunch of money, and get away with virtual murder. I mean, I don't feel very comfortable with that. How is that justice? You know, I mean, I want people that are actually attempting to murder people or to beat them up or to rob them to be prosecuted for those crimes. I feel uncomfortable in a society where a person can be accused of domestic violence or rape or burglary and get away with it if they have enough money and if they know the right attorney who knows the right judge or the right prosecutor. That's not justice at all. That's cruel and inhuman. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's at the definition of absolute corruption and a completely the opposite of fair treatment under the law. I mean, that there's no possible justification for that kind of behavior in anything that's supposed to be a free and just society.
Yeah. And you know, the worst part is that our town, you know, our little town, it's one of the biggest county, it's one of the biggest cities in the state, but we're spread out all over the place, and we don't have crime rings and a need for all this. all the explanations given by the mayor and his supporters are that this is going to generate revenue. And what the voters forgot yesterday is that that $28.5 million is going to have to be paid back some way. Mm-hmm. So we are going to wind up being co-opted. Either we are going to agree that the cops need to get on the roads and give out a lot more tickets and basically steal from travelers, or we are going to have to pony up more in property taxes and more in sales taxes and more in other creative taxes, like the cell phone tax, in order for us to pay back that money. How is that promoting public safety or confidence in the government? It's not.
Exactly. And I think that right over there is, I think it's just so good to hear that we have people like you that are working on that very specific issue, this basic idea of equal protection under the law, that basic thing that says there should not be any more crony capitalism. There shouldn't be separate treatment for people based on who you know and who you don't know. And there shouldn't be an expansion of the ways in which we can arrest people for silly things. I mean, most of the country right now is starting to figure out that that's the opposite of what we need to be doing, that we need to be getting fewer people in prison, that we need to end things like the war on drugs. Now, when you were talking in Missouri about some of these ideas, do you think Missouri is going in that direction of reducing or ending the drug war and stopping the prosecution of these victimless non-crimes?
We are definitely looking at, they're finally awakening to the fact that we need some changes to the system. We just had another man exonerated from a death sentence after it came to light that 13 years ago, the prosecuting attorney, Kenny Holsoff, our former federal representative, was prosecutor who prosecuted the guy, and the state just forgot to turn over evidence. They lost evidence, or they decided the evidence didn't really matter. And this kid got busted and sent to jail for, 13 years. And he wants $100 million because they took his life from him. That alarms a lot of people. Reading about marijuana traffickers who have got, near life sentences for having, 50 pounds of pot, doesn't seem right. We want to see, people who have actually committed murder actually going to jail for that rather than giving them up because we need to let the pot dealers loose. There's a big in our state, a lot of people have noticed that, like statistically speaking, if you're a black person in our state, you are four times as likely to be pulled over by the police, or five times as likely, no, eight times as likely to be pulled over by the police on the road and then prosecuted for some drug charge. I think they say that 25% of the time a black person pulled over will be found to have drugs, and they'll prosecute for that. At the same time, 33% of the white people we pull over are caught with drugs. But a black person is still eight times more likely than the white person to get busted. So, this has stirred up a lot of racial unrest, and it's plainly some kind of racial profiling. The drug war, apparently, at least in my state, has more to do with disliking people that aren't the majority color and imprisoning them. And, and again, they're also poor and they're less likely to be connected. So here we go again. It really has become a very corrupt and wicked system. Now people are starting to wake up. We actually expect to have, I believe there are two marijuana legalization proposals. One has been approved for our ballot. I'm not sure if the other one is available yet, but the petitions are going to be out there and circulating. Turns out there's a generational divide. People that are about 35 and under seem to be really okay with pot legalization and even other kinds of legalization, or I should say re-legalization, since it was all legal for the first 130 years we were a country. and there are other people I met a Mormon, a very conservative Mormon police chief, who is championing an end to the war on drugs because he says the drugs aren't the problem. It's the enforcement. And then as a police officer, as a chief of police, he wants his men and women out on the field dealing with people that are, having collisions and might need assistance on the side of the road, or people that have, wild dog problems, or folks that are dealing with our floods. We're having floods right now due to the great rains for the last 2 days. He wants his cops to be out doing that kind of police work. He says, but because of the way the laws are, it's just easier to go after people that are doing drugs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like there's an incident up here in Lincoln County where some woman and her husband or boyfriend decided to do, I guess they're doing crack. They were very responsible crackheads. They went and bought their crack. They found a place to park their car. They turned the car off, pulled the keys out, got higher than a kite, and fell asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Not a big threat to society. But I sat in court and watched them get, she got 4.5 years and he got 5.
Wow.
Oh, and they can't talk to each other again.
And see that right there. Go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry. That just confuses me.
Yeah, and see, that right there is exactly why it's so important to have people like you doing the work that you're doing, running for office. Drake, let me thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. I look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Guys, folks like Drake are doing so much good work. They're fighting the fight. They're working to get government out of the way of people's freedom, working to downsize government so that it's no longer treating people unfairly, working to put an end to things like crony capitalism and unfair treatment before the law. But they can't do it alone. If you want to help this happen, go to lp.org/states and see how to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. My next guest is Kyler Dineen. Kyler has been working with the Libertarian Party for quite a bit of time now. In fact, shortly after graduating high school, he actually became elected as their youngest board member. Today, he's actually working to advance Land for the Homeless, a nonprofit corporation whose mission is to foster a community and advocate for those in need of shelter. And currently, he is running for the position of Old Bridge Town Council, supported by the Libertarian Party of New Jersey. Kyler, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Arvin. Thanks for having me on.
Kyler, you know, I've seen so many things about your campaign, heard a lot of great things. You know, one of the things that you've talked about, correct me if this is wrong, is working to reduce property taxes.
Oh, I mean, our property taxes in New Jersey, anyone who lives here will tell you that they're absurd. It goes without saying. I recently had a friend who moved right over from Rahway down to South Carolina, and she's paying in 1 month's worth of taxes. Mm-hmm. For her entire year that she would otherwise be paying in Jersey. It's insane what we're being charged.
Now, what are these taxes going for? I mean, if we get rid of these taxes or if we lower these taxes, is that going to lead to some kind of other disaster that we haven't considered?
I certainly don't think so. I think that we've cut in certain areas and our township has survived just fine. We have a fantastic school system. Our roads seem to be pretty decent. I actually was speaking to a woman yesterday who is complaining about the number of potholes on her street. So I think it's not just a matter of just cutting spending as a whole, but I think it's a matter of investing in the right areas, and in doing so, reducing property taxes. Not a lot of people know this about Old Bridge, but we had a multi-million dollar budget surplus last year, but none of that money returned to the property, you know, the taxpayers.
And that, but that's ridiculous. So, I mean, if there's a surplus, I mean, people sometimes laugh like a surplus is like a good idea. I'm like, no, a surplus just means you're charging too much and therefore should pay it back. I mean, that's money that you took, you know, for absolute necessities, not just to have around to use for something ridiculous.
Right. And people think that it's the government's right to have that money, but it's our money. We're the ones who worked for it.
Now, let's just like turn this around for a second. If we were to cut these property taxes, what would be some of the benefits that people would see? I mean, what benefits would happen in Old Bridge if there were fewer if the property taxes were lower?
Well, just looking at the budget surplus alone, I'm positive that we can cut at least 15% without cutting in any other areas. So that's just taking it right off the top. And then in other areas, I have to say, and I don't say this to a lot of people, but I am in liberty-minded individuals here. Our township employees, not those who I think deserve it, but some of the really higher-up officials, get paid such ridiculous salaries. So many people in our township get paid over $115,000 a year. We're a town of 65,000 people, nonetheless, but it's still quite insane to look at just how much our local public employees are being paid when right now the middle class in our town is suffering.
And it's important for people to realize that that suffering is that there's a kind of a direct cause and effect over there. I imagine that if the people in the, if the middle class people in the township suddenly had much lower property taxes, lower sales taxes, just lower taxes, had more of their own money to invest as they saw fit, you know, they that seems to be to me the most likely way to bring up the middle class.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, again, people don't realize it's their money. It's better off in their hands. And I've seen it time and time again, just the bureaucracy, both on a local township basis and also on a county basis, and especially a state basis with all the different boards and boards overseeing boards. And it's much better left in the hands of the people who earn that money.
Yeah, you know, New Jersey in so many ways is such a big, huge government area, not just in terms of taxes, but actually in terms of regulations. I mean, I remember when I was when I was first starting out after college, my first job was at an insurance company, Geico, and Geico had actually made the decision at the time to just stop working entirely in New Jersey because of the regulations.
Oh yeah, we just had BMW leave the state because it wasn't beneficial for the corporation to be located here. And when that happens, you're losing jobs. You are losing jobs by the unfavorable business conditions that are being forced on people.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways that either through your campaign or through your work with the New Jersey Libertarian Party that you're fighting to reduce some of those regulations or get rid of them entirely?
Well, if we have enough time, I can actually read one of the very ridiculous, very briefly, regulations that we actually have in town. Now, this is, if anyone wants to read this, it's on oldbridge.com, and you can click on over to the township code. And this is chapter 394, and it details the very many regulations that are involved in town with the sale of so-called holiday plants and Christmas trees. And I just think it's so crazy that this is what our town council is sitting and crafting up.
So there's regulations now, about Christmas trees?
Oh, they're not just there are excessive regulations about Christmas trees.
I mean,
this is what the Democrats and the Republicans are sitting around and doing. Now, you need to, in order to sell a holiday plant, and they actually have two separate chapters. I'm just going to read one of them for the purpose of time. Now, in order to sell holiday plants, you need to have an application submitted to the township clerk with a fee of $100. Now, this is the part where it gets very frustrating. Applicants to sell holiday plants and flowers need to be fingerprinted and photographed. I'm not making this up. This is right in our township code. Fingerprinted and photographed to sell holiday plants.
So the holiday plants, like basically, I mean, what, that's just like Christmas trees, maybe poinsettias. Is, I mean, what is that? What are they? What is, are they afraid of here?
I don't. That's a great question. I don't have the answer to that question. Okay. I'm the wrong person to ask. You need to have $100,000 liability insurance, certificate of sales tax authority submitted. And now this, I don't even think could be legal. The sale of flowers or plants shall be limited to a period within 48 hours of the occurrence of any national holiday or religious holiday. Now, that means if you're selling a holiday plant, a poinsettia, like you said, 4 days before Christmas, you're breaking the law.
Wow.
This is New Jersey. The sale of flowers or plants should not be permitted within 2,000 feet of any florist shop. Written notarized permission of the property owner is required for any sales of plants on private property. You need to get this location approved by the zoning officer and the police department. They can deny it. No signs or banners are permitted attracting business to the licensed location. And then no other merchandise shall be offered for sale, such as, but not limited to, dolls, stuffed animals, painting of furniture. Now, I don't know about you, Arvin, but I hate it when I go out to buy a Christmas tree and they try and sell me a bedroom set. I think it's an epidemic. I think it's an epidemic that needs to be stopped.
Wow. It's like they've literally passed a law to destroy jobs. They're saying, we want to grow the economy, but we don't want there to be any buying and selling going on. And we don't want people to be able to get a Christmas tree in a reasonable amount of time.
You can't make this stuff up.
Now, and the thing is, what's troubling to me is, you know, hearing the language of this bill, of this law, of this rule, of this government-enforced regulation, hearing the language, this doesn't sound to me like something that was, you know, passed in 1763 and somebody forgot to take it off the books. This sounds like something that was passed, you know, in the last 50 years.
Yeah, it was passed in the last 50 years. It was actually in 1973 is when it was passed, according to what I'm seeing here. And then they amended it. They felt the need to go back and amend this 25 years later in 1998. Not only are they putting these regulations into place, they then feel the need to go over and revise these ridiculous regulations.
So, and this is important because people often say, these regulations, you know, it's just like people haven't gotten around to getting rid of them, but they're not eventually going to do anything unless we force them to. And the only way to force them to do it is by voting libertarian, by volunteering with the libertarian campaigns.
You know, even I think they're even co-opting, you know, our charitable contributions. I right now, like you said, I am the executive director of Land for the Homeless. Basically, it's an organization that's set up in order to anyone can go online to landforthehomeless.org if they want to find out more information about the project. It's basically to be able to set a legal campground for the homeless to be able to live on, because we had a situation down in Lakewood Township where about 80-something homeless people were living on unused public land, and the government had to come in and kick them out of the land, and they never bothered to actually have a purpose for that land after they kicked these people out. With nowhere else to go, we're criminalizing the homeless. And the actual process of trying to get the permits and the zoning and everything else that's required in order to actually house a camp for the immediate assistance of the homeless, it's like the government is acting against the interests of its people. And it's horrible.
And that's like an important – that's such an important point, because people say, without the government, how would we help the homeless? The government is what's stopping us from helping the homeless. The government is hurting the homeless. We need to stop the government from hurting the homeless. I mean, there's the idea that we have so many blockades to charity is just unspeakable. There is just no justification for that. That's sick. It's bizarre. Now,
even the IRS, you have to pay $400 to get tax exemption status. So you actually have to pay the government money to ask them to not be charged for taxes on charitable contributions. It's crazy.
That's unbelievable. Let's talk a little bit more about some of these issues surrounding charity specifically right after this short break. Kyler, is the best place for people to follow you, is it your Facebook page or your website?
So it's facebook.com/KylaDineen. Anyone can also make a donation to the campaign. It's K-Y-L-E-R-D at njlt.org. And if anyone wants to make any contributions to Land for the Homeless, it's landforthehomeless.org.
Awesome. We're going to continue talking with Kyla right after this. Now, the thing is, you know the work that Kyla is trying to do. It's important work trying to protect the homeless, trying to reduce property taxes, trying to make a freer society that cares for those that need to be cared for. But he can't do this all by himself. If you want to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state, go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We're talking right now with Kyla Dineen, who's running for Old Bridge Town Council in New Jersey. In the last segment, we talked about ways in which the government is getting in the way of commerce and ways in which the government is getting in the way of charity. Kyla, what are some of the ways that we can make – what can we do to make government get out of the way of charity?
I think there are a lot of things. I don't even know where I would start. I know Mark Feldman in particular, who's very involved, you know, the LNC along with you, has a recommendation to actually offer a tax credit, a dollar for dollar tax credit for nonprofit contributions, not just to be able to deduct them, but to actually get a credit in order to, cut certain dependencies. But I always thought that people helping people voluntarily was the best way to accomplish any goal. And I think that charity and the homeless in particular is no different.
Now, what we're talking about over here, let's just like, it's an interesting proposition that I've heard quite a few ideas about. And the idea is this, that instead of making something tax deductible, we'd say that if you donate $100 to this charitable organization, you will cut your taxes by $100. So instead of being forced to support, a government welfare program that simply doesn't work and often runs exactly counter to the goal, you could support a private charity that does work and actually achieves the goal. Is that the basic idea we're talking about?
Sure. And I think that a lot of 501c3 organizations in particular have very stringent reporting requirements, that all of their information with their donations is publicly available. But I don't even think we have to stop there when it comes to tax credits. I think also even on a local level, for example, in my council campaign, one of the things that I'm very strongly advocating for that I've gotten so much great feedback in speaking about is that I think that we should offer a tax credit to pay for the difference that we have to pay on our own for garbage pickup. The township doesn't provide garbage pickup, which I think is actually a good thing. We have five different competing companies that all want Old Bridge's business. And I think that it's great that on a consumer-by-consumer basis, just like my family did, you can pick which one you want. And I think that you can get a price cheaper than the township would be able to get you. But I think that you should get a tax credit for the difference.
Wow. And that's something that people often don't realize, that a lot of these, quote, government services that we get aren't actually government services. They're private services that the government buys on our behalf, usually at a higher cost, because that's kind of how crony capitalism works.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, in addition to just the basic idea of, you know, just having the government out of it entirely, not just have the government not provide the service, but also have the government not take in or steal the revenue. And I think that right over there is a powerful idea. I mean, do you see this as something that over time we could extend to all kinds of different government areas?
Yeah, you know, I think it's especially scary in a state like New Jersey, where we have Menendez being indicted, and we have actually the most percentage of corrupt politicians than any other state. So New Jersey in particular has a wide history of having public services being very sort of backroom deals, crony capitalism, as you say, and violation of many different both election laws and public official laws, where there are politicians in office that are gaining very heavily on a private basis from the taxpayer dollar. And that's true of both the Democrats and the Republicans, which is why I refuse to associate with either of them.
And I think that right there is such an important distinction. When you see somebody that's planning to offer you some benefit from more government, you can be sure that that more government, there's going to be a bit of a cut that in one way or the other is going to get to that crony capitalist candidate. But if we have someone who's running specifically to downsize government and talking about how you can do more with your own money, then that money is yours. If you want to give it to that person, you can, but no one's forcing you to. And I think that transition is so, so important. Now, let's talk a little bit about you know, just some of the different areas. You know, where do you how have you seen so far? I mean, I know that you were nominated pretty recently, but what have been some of the responses that you've gotten so far from just presenting some of these ideas?
Well, I actually, very yesterday, I went to Christie's town hall meeting that was located in Old Bridge, Governor Christie. And just in speaking to all of the residents there in particular, even my current ward councilwoman, I've gotten such great responses from people that really like the idea of me being socially to the left, but fiscally to the right. And, you know, got support of PTA moms, various people who are very heavily involved in the local townships goings about, which I thought was absolutely amazing, because I think that both of them are sick of politics as usual. And I think most of them are sick of broken promises. And now, you know, as a town council member, I'm only good for one vote. You know, I can only do as much as my other fellow council members will allow me to do, which is why I think it's so essential to not just elect one politician that represents your views, but to elect as many as possible. I think with the two-party system in particular, independents and third-party candidates keep getting considered as if they're a wasted vote. But I think it's quite the opposite. I think it's a wasted vote if you're voting against your interests time and time again, and you keep voting for the same problem time and time again. But I've been so pleasantly surprised by the amount of positive support that I've gotten from my fellow residents of Old Bridge, and I think that I stand a very great chance at winning, and I thank them for that.
Absolutely. Kyler, let me thank you first so much for being on the show today and for sharing the work you're doing and the views that you're sharing in the community.
Absolutely, anytime.
Guys, folks like Kyler are working so hard to downsize big government. If you want to follow Kyler's campaign, you can go to facebook.com/KylerDeneen. And you can find ways to get involved with his campaign, donate to his campaign, and make sure that we downsize regulation, reduce property taxes, and reduce the barriers to charity that right now we're seeing in New Jersey. If you want to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state, you got to get to lp.org/states. You can meet other great libertarians. You can get involved in social media or traditional outreach. In fact, you might decide to make the single biggest contribution you can to the cause of liberty, which is doing exactly what Kyler is doing right here, and run for office. There is nothing that you can do to advance freedom and make sure that we get liberty in our lifetimes more effectively than you can by running for office. But that first step is going to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. Signing off until next week. I'll talk to you then.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.